Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the White House. I'm Valerie Jarrett. I'm senior advisor to President Obama, and I have the honor of chairing the White House Council on Women and Girls. As many of you know, the council was created by President Obama a year ago, and it represents his commitment to strengthening the standing of women and girls in the United States and around the world. The membership of the council consists of representatives from every agency in the federal government and every office in the White House. Together, we are carrying out the President's directive, which he issued when he created the council. It's a directive to every part of the federal government to address the needs of women and girls in everything from budgeting to health care to education reform. Today, our focus is on workplace flexibility and how we can build a 21st century workplace that meets the changing needs of our workforce. In these challenging economic times, it's more important than ever to improve the productivity of both the United States businesses and our government. We thank you for joining us to participate in this very important conversation. In a minute, I have the very special honor of introducing the First Lady of the United States. But before I do that, let me tell you more about this afternoon's program and the reasons why the White House Council decided to host this forum. Today, we're going to hear from a distinguished lineup of speakers. We'll hear from private sector managers, academic experts, government officials, corporate leaders, media icons, labor leaders, issue advocacy organizations, and of course, working women themselves. Each person has a unique insight into this important issue, and we want to hear about best practices and practical solutions. We want to learn how we in the private and the public sector can be better support and strengthen the working families in the nation, in this nation, and our economy. After we hear from the First Lady, Good Morning America's Claire Schickman, hello Claire, welcome, will moderate our first panel, and we appreciate your being here. This panel will take up the question of what is workplace flexibility, why is it necessary, and what does it actually look like? Next, you'll each participate in breakout sessions. Here you'll discuss topics including the new normal and flexible workplace policies that benefit the economy. Other panels will discuss how to make such policies a working reality in different sectors, from small business to big corporations. We encourage everyone to be open and to share your knowledge and your experience on what works and also, most importantly, what does not work. That way, when we leave here today, we'll be refocused on implementing the best of these ideas for more of America's working families. John Barry, the Director of the Office of Personnel and Management, will help us wrap up today's program. He's going to brief you on the federal government's plan to respond to the changing workforce. Finally, we'll hear from President Obama. He'll make closing comments and reinforce the message that the workplace flexibility is a priority not just for the businesses, but for the federal government as well. He'll tell you that this administration intends to compete with the private sector for the very best employees. We want to attract and retain the best and the brightest. We want to improve the quality of life for our workforce. We want to do this because we know it'll improve the quality of work, and if we do, in turn, it's going to improve the quality of service to you, the American people. The President and the First Lady's participation in today's forum sends a very strong message about just how important this commitment is to them and hopefully to all of you. As we in the federal government are challenging ourselves, we hope that the private sector will also work hard across the country to do just the same. We're pleased, for example, that Corporate Voices for Working Families has come up with a challenge for the business community. It's a challenge in which companies will encourage their peers to adopt as many of the smart practices that provide workplace flexibility. This is the type of competition that can work for both employers and employees. It can also help us pave the way for the creative workplace of the future. We look forward to hearing updates on your progress and other efforts across the country. In fact, the conversation we begin today will continue around the country as we convene similar forums in the coming months. By connecting directly to these communities, we will continue to learn about practices and challenges that local government, business, and employees face in implementation. All of these voices must be heard, because it's an issue that fundamentally affects all Americans at work and how we live. And let me expand on this point for just a moment. Consider the women's evolution within our society. The majority of households no longer have one working parent and one stay-at-home caretaker. Increasingly, women have entered the workforce and taken over the prime role of being the primary breadwinner. Women are now half of our nation's workforce. At home, they make the majority of household decisions in terms of buying, and generally speaking, more studies are showing that companies that hire and retain women have a healthier bottom line. With these facts in mind, we believe that we must re-examine how the modern workplace functions. We believe that we must understand who works and how flexible policies will impact them and their families. This is why the President's Council of Economic Advisers issued a report today entitled Work-Life Balance and the Economics of Workforce Flexibility. The Council Chair, Christy Romer, Christy Wave, will detail this report during our panel discussion. We believe that more workplaces should try to do a better job in meeting the growing needs of their employees and their families. It's not just the right thing to do, but of course it's the smart thing to do for the government and for any company that wants to stay competitive. Working together, we are confident that we can all do a better job in meeting the needs of American families and workers. In fact, we must do better. And our work starts here today with discussions just like this one. We are so delighted to have such a wonderful, diverse, and accomplished group to help us tackle this issue. And I want to take just a moment to thank the people who were critical in making this event possible, including my team at the White House, Executive Director of the Council on Women and Girls, Tina Chin. Tina, wave back there. And Tina couldn't do what she does without her able team, consisting of her deputy, Jenny Kaplan, Maud Begetta, Avra Siegel, and the National Economic Council. So please, a round of applause to our team here. I also want to recognize, of course, Claire Shipman, the author of Womenomics and a senior national correspondent for ABC News, Good Morning America, who, as I mentioned, will moderate our first panel shortly. Claire? Claire is a strong and powerful voice in the workplace flexibility, and we're just delighted to have her here. I also wanted to acknowledge journalist Cokie Roberts. Cokie, where are you? I know, there you are, please. And I don't know if it's called this, but first gentleman of Michigan, Daniel Mahern, where are you? Please stand up. All trailblazers in business. So with that, before I conclude and introduce the first lady, I also want to mention that we are so fortunate to have here authors and experts and labor leaders and organizations that have been advocates and university professors, all who have come to join us. And not to mention that we're also streaming our entire event over the net. And so we hope for those of you in the office or at home that you will be engaged and continue with us in this process as well as we work to champion this issue and challenge us all to do better for American families. So with that, I would like to move forward and introduce our next speaker. The First Lady. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about the First Lady before she comes out here. So there's not much more to add other than you guys have already learned in the course of the last several years since she's hit the national stage. But I've had the privilege of knowing her for many, many years and having worked with her closely and observed how she has worked so hard to balance the needs of being an extraordinarily accomplished professional, being a terrific mom, and being a great spouse. And she speaks very openly about the challenges, and she, through her own career, has worked hard to push her employers to recognize the importance of flexibility. And so many times along the campaign trail and in the course of the last year, she has helped people realize that it's okay to say you can't necessarily do it all without support. And she's had terrific support in her life. She's had it before she came to the White House, and she certainly has it here But she recognizes better than anybody, because of her life experiences, that so many women do not have the safety net. And so many women are trying desperately to juggle without the support that they need. And so she is a strong advocate for workforce flexibility. And so without any further delay, let me introduce the First Lady of the United States of America, Michelle Obama.
You are welcome. Have fun. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thanks so much, everyone. Please rest. You're working hard enough as it is. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the White House, sort of. We're across the street, but it's good to have you all here. I want to thank Valerie for that very kind introduction, for her outstanding work, not just on this issue, but on so many others, her friendship and support. And I also want to thank her staff, again, who have done just a phenomenal job in organizing this conference and bringing us all together. This is just a wonderful way to spend an afternoon on an important issue. I'd also like to thank all of the outstanding members of this administration who are here, for taking the time to be here today. And I want to thank everyone who's joined us to share their ideas and expertise on this critically important topic. Thank you for taking the time. As Valerie said, we've come here today to have a conversation about workplace flexibility, an important part of balancing our responsibilities as employees, as breadwinners, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, husbands, and wives. It's an issue that many folks have struggled with for so many years, and one that we as a society just hasn't really quite figured out yet. And as the parents of two beautiful young daughters, it is an issue that is particularly important to me and my husband. As you know, as Valerie said, I've talked about this so often, and it is true in our current life, we are incredibly blessed. We have amazing resources and support systems here at the White House that I could have never imagined. Number one of them is having grandmother living upstairs. We all need one of those. So can you figure that out? But we didn't always live in the White House. And for many years before coming to Washington, I was a working mother, doing my best to juggle the demands of my job with the needs of my family, with a husband who has crazy ideas. And as I've said before, I consider myself, as many of us in this room do, as a 120%er, which means that if I'm not doing something at 120%, I feel like I'm failing. And I know you all can relate to that. So while I did the best that I could at work and at home, I felt like I wasn't keeping up with either one of them enough. And I was lucky. I had understanding bosses. I had very accommodating jobs. In fact, in the last job I had before coming to the White House, I remember this clearly. I was on maternity leave with Sasha, still trying to figure out what to do with my life, and I got a call for an interview for this position, senior position at the hospitals. And I thought, okay, here we go. So I had to scramble to look for babysitting and couldn't find one. So what did I do? I packed up that little infant and I put her in the stroller and I brought her with me. And I prayed that her presence wouldn't be an automatic disqualifier. And it was fortunate for me that, number one, she slept through the entire interview. And I was still breastfeeding, if that's not too much information. And I got the job. But I know that I was lucky, number one. I was interviewing with the president that had just had a child himself, and was very understanding and open-minded, but I know that most folks are nowhere near as lucky as I was, particularly right now with the job market the way it is. Many folks can't afford to be picky about the jobs that they take. Many folks don't have access to any kind of family leave policies whatsoever, no flexible working arrangements. Many people don't even have a paid sick day. So they are struggling every day to find affordable childcare or someone to look after an aging parent, which is becoming more the issue. Scrambling to make things work when the usual arrangements fall through. All of us have been through that. So they spend a lot of time hoping and praying that everything will work out just perfectly. I remember those days, just the delicate balance of perfection. And as all the parents in this room know, it's never perfect, ever. But here's the thing. As we all know here today, it just doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that hard. And that's something that I learned from myself, not just as an employee, but as a manager. When I discovered that the more flexibility that I gave to my staff to be good parents, and I valued that, the happier my staff was likely to be, and the greater chance they were to stay and not leave, because they knew they might not find the same kind of flexibility somewhere else. So it's something that many of the companies here today have discovered, very fortunately, that flexible policies actually make employees more, not less, productive. Because as you all know, instead of spending time worrying about what's happening at home, your employees have the support and the peace of mind that they desperately need to concentrate on their work. You all are pioneering the innovative ideas and the best practices to make balancing work and family life easier for your employees and better for your bottom lines. You're doing so much, providing discounts on childcare, important. Setting up scholarship programs to help pay for college, amazing. Many of you are offering compressed work weeks. You're offering generous leave time and mentoring programs that connect new parents or caregivers with folks who've been through it before. And you're giving employees the right to even approach you and have an open and honest conversation about how to create a more flexible schedule. That is critical. So here in the federal government, we're trying to follow your lead, putting our money where our mouth is to adopt more of those best practices, from expanding telework access to providing emergency childcare and more affordable daycare. And that's why this administration supports the Healthy Families Act, which would let millions more working Americans earn up to 7 days of a year of paid sick time to care for themselves and their families. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it's important. These are just a few of the examples of what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm looking forward to hearing more of the many ideas, the ways that you're figuring out how to make this issue work for your employees. We are excited today to learn about your ideas, your best practices, what many of you have done to support your employees and to boost your bottom line at the same time. So with that, I want to again thank you all. I want to thank you for the work that you've done in your companies to set the tone. I want to thank you for taking the time to share your ideas with us today. So now my work is done. I can now turn it over to Claire and the panel, and you guys will figure this all out.
45 minutes.
That's right, 45 minutes. Shorter than healthcare, right?
A little.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to, so I can see you.
Mrs. Obama and Valerie, I just want to say thank you for putting a spotlight on this issue. I think that the White House focusing on it is going to make a huge difference in encouraging all of these best practices to flourish. Dr. Romer, I'd love to start with you. A lot of the data in the report is so fascinating, and yet most people, probably not the people in this room, but I think most people tend to think of flexibility as a perk, something that's going to cost the company something, a luxury. In fact, I've often said the way people react to work-life balance, I mean, managers seem to want to run screaming down the hallway when you bring it up, that we should just call work-life balance make more money, because that is the bottom line. And that's what's so surprising about flexibility, but not just for businesses, but I was struck by what you found in terms of the economy as a whole. It really helps the larger economy.
Absolutely. I'm going to be shameless and show you the report. And actually, I want to take just 1 minute to single out my colleague, Cecilia Rouse, who's also on the Council of Economic Advisors and played a great role in putting it together. Thank you. You know, you're absolutely right. I think one thing that is true is, flexible workplace, everything from control over what hours you work to where you work to, sort of how you organize your hours. I mean, it is part of a package of compensation, just like your health benefits, your flexibility, your wage, all of that goes, you know, into how we organize our, how we organize paying workers. But I think what you're getting at is, you know, firms often think about it as a cost, but what we found in the report is that there are lots of benefits, absolutely, for workers. I mean, here's a statistic that I think none of us will be surprised at, but I think 1/3 of workers say workplace flexibility, the number one thing they think about in getting a job. So if you're interested in retaining an employee, attracting employees, it's just absolutely crucial, but it's important for things like reducing absenteeism, turnover, all of those things. And to the degree that it helps both workers and firms, obviously it helps the whole economy. But I think what our report also pointed out is, I think what you were getting at, kind of their social benefits, everything from we're able to invest more in our kids or we're able to take care of our parents, that's good for society. But it's also certainly to the degree people are working at home, they're not on the roads commuting. They're not doing it, you know, there's not as much congestion, there's not as much pollution. All of that, I think, gets into the picture. It's a win for employees, for firms, and for the whole society.
Well, and Secretary Solis, I think what Valerie was talking about is this, the stress of so many families now that have both parents working. It's just a new challenge that we haven't faced before. Tell us a little bit about why American workers feel that flexibility is such a priority based on this report, and why in so many cases it seems that that time has become the new currency for them. Time in a lot of ways is every bit as important.
Right. Well, I think the reality for us now, because of this recession that we have gone through and we continue to go through, is that more women are forced to stay in the labor force for even longer hours, and some of them have to acquire an additional job. So for low-skilled workers and those folks that don't have the luxury of having maybe those policies in place right now, it's even harder for them to speak up at work. And I would say to you that the majority of women that are in the workforce are mothers, and some are the primary breadwinners. And unfortunately, we need to have policies that allow for more flexibility. Even if they could negotiate at the local level at their business, maybe it's a five-person group, organization, or firm, that they could take time off if a child is sick or someone in the family, an elderly person needs to go to the doctor, that there's flexibility, that they're not penalized and are not intimidated. So many workers right now are afraid to stand up and say, I need to take a day off because I have to go take my mother to go get her medication or myself to get tested. And a lot of women, I think, are very fearful because there's so much uneasiness in the workplace. So we need to have employers to be more understanding. And because of the situation where more women are in the workforce, I'm hoping that policies will be more flexible and adaptable right now. And I think it's important for us to take that leadership role at the federal level, but also to give examples and show where these efforts have worked. I know in my state, in the state of California, there are policies there that allow for that. But we need more states to participate as well and to have some incentives to make that happen.
And it's not always about people wanting to work part-time, right? It's just about having that little bit of control,
yes,
over your schedule.
Right.
Is it Doug?
Yeah.
You can answer a lot of questions for us. CEO of Campbell Soup, thank you very much. And you have, you're rolling your eyes?
Yes. I can try.
Yes, you know, we're counting on you. But you have really made diversity and flexibility at Campbell Soup a priority and have seen some of the benefits. Can you just give us an overview of what you found as you've tried to move to a policy at your company that is more focused on results and on letting people work the way they want to work?
Sure. First of all, we're anchored in and have been for 140 years in one of the most challenged but spirited cities in the United States, and that's Camden, New Jersey. And so we're trying to attract workers into Camden to come work for our company and compete with world-class companies from the who's who in consumer packaged goods. So we believe we have to create a very compelling employee value proposition to attract, develop, and retain them. I think you're absolutely right, Secretary Solis, that it's hard to create an environment where people are trusting enough to have courageous conversations with their managers. We have focused on creating a high trust culture that is high performance. We believe you can do both. In fact, we believe you have to demand to do both. And we believe if you create a high trust culture, a friend of mine says, trust is the one thing that changes everything. and it changes conversations. And today, we have recently did a survey around workplace flexibility, and I was encouraged to see that 85% of our employees are comfortable enough to have a conversation with their manager around it. So I think the prerequisite is to create a high trust, high engagement culture. And the byproduct of that is you can do amazing things in diversity or workplace flexibility or what our business performance. Encouragingly, as we've leaned into this workplace flexibility diversity notion, we've improved earnings every year. We've improved sales every year for 10 straight years through the depression. It feels that way, but through the recession. And we have record high return on invested capital numbers. And we're proud of our business performance, but it's been accompanied by a new life with our culture built on trust, built on employee engagement. And it was interesting what Mrs. Obama said. Our Campbell promises, Campbell valuing people, people valuing Campbell. You see, we believe that we can't ask them to value our agenda until we tangibly demonstrate to them that we value their agenda. In my work experience, it just doesn't work any other way. And that's basically what she was talking about. She said, well, we value their agenda, and guess what? They do even better work for us. And we've discovered that at Campbell. And part of a tangible commitment to helping someone deal with their workplace situation, the number one issue is workplace flexibility. So we have to address it. And the good news is we do, and the more we do, the better we do. And it's an absolute delight to watch those contributions build on one another in a flywheel effect and spiral into something that's very exciting.
People often don't believe me when I start to talk about companies and the increases in productivity they've seen. At Best Buy and some of their trials, they've seen a 40% increase in productivity, or Capital One. It's startling, but it sounds as though you're saying the same thing. You think it's linked.
We see that every day, and we see it not only in the numbers, but we see it in the spring in the step of the people there. There is an energy that's palpable. When we started, we do this Gallup survey. Two people we had very engaged in the work, we had one person looking for a job, which is not quite world class. World class is 12 people for every one person looking for a job. Today, last year we just completed, we were 23 people with the spring in their step for every one that was looking for a job. And you feel it when you walk in. So we do track it, we're maniacal about measurement, as every business has to be, right, Jim? But at the same time, so we get the metrics, but we also see an attitude, and you were kind enough to invite Beth to come along, and Beth works with me at Campbell, and at 3:42 in the afternoon, they said, well, could you bring someone along with you? And with true flexibility, Beth was able to join us and talk about her personal experiences doing that.
But that's Beth. I want to see that spring in your step. But tell us, you told me when we were talking earlier that you've had a flexible work arrangement for about 5 years. Your oldest child is 5 years. So, were you scared to bring that up initially? I know Campbell's is a great company, but even so, was that a frightening prospect when you were looking at how you were going to make it all work?
It was definitely a challenge. And so the situation happened when my first son was born, and I had selected a daycare. I felt very happy about the daycare and was very pleased with the facility. Unfortunately, they weren't able to accommodate him on Wednesdays, just for the first month. And so I was ready to come back to work. I was on maternity leave. And so I called my boss and I said, hey, listen, here's my situation. I'd love to come back to work right now. However, I don't have care for my son on Wednesdays. Would you mind if I worked from home on Wednesdays, and then we'll kind of see where it goes from there? And without hesitation, he said, absolutely, no problem. Can you come back Monday? And so, here was a man who had 4 sons himself. So he knew what it was about. I mean, Doug had created a culture where he was able to tell me yes and not hesitate. So while it was a challenge and while it was nerve-wracking, it was what I had to do to provide for my family and to take care of my son and to follow the career path that I had set out for myself.
And what have been some of the challenges for you in making flexible work work? It's not always an easy path,
no,
right?
It's certainly not. And I think there's so many myths out there that are just not reality. So that if I'm working from home, I actually am working, you know? And so it's not as if I'm out doing, you know, something else. I'm on my computer, I'm on the phone, I'm on conference calls. I can still participate fully. My face is just not in the office. And so that's been a challenge. The other perception that's wrong, I think, and particularly at Campbell, is that if you're on a flexible work arrangement, and I do two things. I work from home one day a week, and I also flex my hours, so I come in earlier and then leave a little earlier because of my commute to be able to go pick up my children. Many women are concerned that if they do something like that, they'll be passed over for a promotion. And it was interesting. There was a role that was created at Campbell. It would have been a promotion. A higher grade level for me. And I had the conversation with my husband and said, well, I'd probably be willing to give that up, but let's see how it goes. And unbeknownst to me, the head of our department had already brokered my flexibility arrangement with who was going to be my new boss. And so when they presented me with the offer, they said, well, congratulations, here's the role. And by the way, we know about your flexibility arrangement, and we see no reason why that shouldn't continue.
They knew how to motivate you
they
to take the job.
Did.
That's living proof of what we were talking about. You show that kind of sincerity and earnest desire to be helpful. And we've got Beth for life, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right?
That's right.
Right? That's what I thought.
You heard it here. Now, Dr. Romer, there are a lot of different sorts of, I mean, everybody has a different idea about what flexibility means. There's so many different sorts of flexible work arrangements. And you also talked about one in the report, which is sort of the ultimate, which is the focus on results. Can you tell us a little bit about how they break down?
No, absolutely. So we were mentioning before, it can be everything from working a compressed week, so 4 days, maybe longer hours, a shorter day on the fifth day, just as Beth has, of starting earlier, ending earlier. It can be so sort of any range of things like that, the telecommuting and obviously working from home part of the time can be a part of it. But you're right, there are lots of other arrangements. And, you know, I actually, when I think, you know, before I had this job, and certainly the job that Cece and I both had was as college professors. And it is the ultimate results-only work environment, right? You're judged on your course evaluations and what you publish. And if you're not there some days, that's fine. All they're looking at mm-hmm. is what you do. And you know, it meant so much to me. I have three children, and what has, you know, just it meant I was able to be there for the school plays, and when someone was sick, it made all the difference in the world. And I even had some of the same experience that Beth had of, I had an offer to leave my employer, and one of the things that really kept me there was remembering how good they'd been to me when my children were little and how they had judged me fairly. So it is, I think, incredibly important. And that is, you know, I think something that's important. You know, I was really struck by, I love the example of Campbell's, because we often think, well, sure, a college professor, you have flexibility. Right. The idea that in a manufacturing firm, you can have flexibility. One of the, I thought, the really surprising things, we often think of small businesses, and I know Karen Mills is here, that, you know, can they really have flexibility? Well, one of the things that we found was actually, if you look at the results now, small businesses seem to be more flexible, right? So that kind of goes against some of these perceptions.
Well, a lot of the women are starting small businesses, right? They're leaving the big firms, starting small businesses, and then they're flexible. So,
right.
Secretary Solis, we should talk about the lower wage workers, though, because there's a lot of focus on, you know, it is much easier for companies to give flexibility to professional men and women and people who can work at home from computers and have the jobs that allow for that. But there is a great need, probably even a greater need, for flexibility in the different areas, working on an assembly line, working in a shop floor. So, the way you grew up with your parents, I mean, people need mm-hmm. some flexibility. And I've listened to a lot of companies struggling with how to provide a little more autonomy. Is there hope on that front that you've seen? What are companies doing?
Well, I think that we've heard already that the best practices that help our manufacturing organizations and businesses is when they do have that trust with their employee, that they can negotiate or at least have that discussion without fear of, you know, retaliation or somehow losing hours or losing their job. And those are things that come to us in many instances, but we find that it's better when you can show that you are open to listening, having a discussion with the employee, especially a woman who may have, she may be the single head of household, and she has issues with childcare, and maybe she doesn't even have, she has to come in to work on public transportation. So there's so many things that are affecting many of our low-skill and low-wage earners right now, and it cuts across the board. So having better facilities for childcare availability, and maybe giving up some time in the mornings so that person could come in a little later, maybe stay later, or maybe making up time on the weekends. And the other thing that I see happening now is that people that want to get into another career and want to go to, say, a community college at night or the weekends, it's not that easy because they're still struggling with trying to find that flexibility. So we do have challenges, but I think the more we learn about what good entrepreneurs are doing and some examples, that's going to help provide more relief for people. And the bottom line is, and you said it earlier, productivity. If you actually reward that employee, they're going to outproduce anybody else. And you're going to want to keep them longer, and you're going to want to nurture that relationship. And for most working families, I think that we figure out how to deal with this. Because I grew up in a big family. And at a very early age, my mother had to go to work for the first time. I was 10 years old. My older sister and I had to each take care of the set of twins that my mom had that were unexpected. So I had to be a mom at 10, and in those days they didn't have Pampers, so that was kind of drilled into my mind that there's got to be something better.
It's really good. It's a very nitty-gritty discussion.
Pampers, breastfeeding, it's all great.
That's right.
Can I follow up with something that Secretary Solis said, which is about education? Because we think about flexibility these days, I mean, of course, elder care, child care, women in the labor force. You know, another trend that's going off is increasing returns to higher education and really a change in the nature of the jobs we'll have. Instead of having one job your whole life, a typical worker is probably going to have five jobs, and that's going to involve a lot of retraining, relearning. And so I think for both men and women, one of the realities is we're going to need to be lifelong learners, and that flexibility to get to a community college, to get the more training, is something we're seeing firms doing, I think because it is productivity enhancing, but it is going to be so important for all workers.
Could I just say something? We haven't really mentioned the other important factor here, and that is that males, the spouses, because of the recession, many in construction and heavy manufacturing have lost their jobs, so they're at home. So some are stepping up to the plate, but many more need to understand that there are so many other resources that they can tap into to help their family so they don't have to be frustrated. And I think that there are a lot of good examples of that available. I think part of it is just making sure that that people work together as a team and that they understand that we have to be adaptable and flexible.
And Secretary, I would just add to that I think there's another cultural shift that has to take place, that when a child is sick or a parent needs to go to the doctor or whatever, it shouldn't default to the woman because she's the woman. And so, I mean, it's important to have a good support system. And I know if one of my children's sick, my husband and I take out our BlackBerries and look at our calendars and say, okay, what do you have? And then we make the decision that way as to who gets to stay home and take the child.
Well, that's
the doctor.
Yeah, my husband's here, so I hope he's listening. Right, honey? Doug, do you think that... the benefits to flexibility are clear, but there are obviously a lot of challenges. One of them, we talked a little bit about the fact that you're looking now at how to bring this to the manufacturing operation in your company. And there isn't an easy answer yet for that, is there?
No, there's not. And it's, people join a company, and we've created a company that does have a spring in its step, a long way to go, but it has real positive momentum. But people join a company, they leave a manager. They leave a specific situation. And what we find is we have to find ways to make sure that the managers are able to have those conversations with the people that want to talk to them. While 85% of our people are inclined to want to talk, the managers are still very uncomfortable with those conversations. So we're finding we have to actually do training and role playing with how are you going to talk about this? Because they've never had these conversations before when you get at this middle management rank. So that's one challenge. The other challenge is in manufacturing, where our manufacturing teams, we were talking in the back there, if you remember the I Love Lucy skit where she's on the chocolate line and one person makes a mistake in that line and the whole line goes down. So in our manufacturing operation, it has to run like clockwork. The teams have to be working together, and it's hard if somebody pulls out. And so we have not been able to crack the code in manufacturing like we have in virtually every other discipline, R&D, sales, marketing, all the world headquarters facilities. So manufacturing is the challenge area. We are making progress, but that's the other challenge area.
I've seen some studies that show that the more autonomy at least people have in setting their schedules, even if they have to be in one place the whole time, if they feel they can have input into setting their schedules, that goes a long way.
It does, and we actually have that in our manufacturing operation. I just wish we could create more flexibility there. It's just harder, but we'll find our way through.
Can I do an example? Because we actually have a great case study in our report looking at Kraft Foods, but with, again, shift work is the classic, and it is I Love Lucy, and it's hard. But you know, it sounds like it shouldn't be hard, but oftentimes workers have to take, you know, vacation in a whole week. And one of the things that we talk about is a program where you brought back retirees, sort of like a trained substitute, and gave workers the ability to have one day vacations if they had that doctor's appointment or mom needed chemotherapy or something. It's a small change. It seems to be working for them, and their employees love it. So there's, you know, an example in a manufacturing firm.
That's a smart solution.
To build on that, people are amazingly resourceful. All you have to do is give them the room to deal with it. We do this engagement survey work, and we look at it over 282 work groups, and the best way for us to get results is to allow each work group to deal with their own issues and figure out how can we create flexibility here and actually improve our output. And it's amazing what they come up with. As long as we get out of the way, we make sure it's principle-centered and that it stays within a broad band of policy. But if you create flexibility for people, they will find their way through. You just have to get out of their way.
And I think that, Beth, one of the other things we were talking about is that a lot of managers are afraid of this, and they're afraid because they don't know how to talk about it.
Right.
As Doug said, you know, you're having to do some training on that. What are the challenges for you as an employee who benefits from this? What do you find is most helpful to make it work smoothly? I've had a lot of people say to me, flexibility is a two-way street, that the employee has to be flexible with
and I, so I gave my example of I needed to be out of the office on Wednesdays, and that was a very short, you know, 4-week time frame. But it ended up that Wednesdays was my day that I worked from home. Well, there are meetings at Campbell's Soup Company that happen on Wednesdays, so I had to be prepared to shift and say, well, okay, if I need to be there on Wednesday, then perhaps I can take Friday. And so I needed to be creative in my solution, and also having to get the people that I reported to comfortable with calling me and contacting me when I was working at home. I remember the first time the phone rang and it was my boss. And I look at the caller ID and I'm like, oh my God, it's her. And I didn't know what to do. I'm like, well, I should probably answer the phone. So I did, and she, you know, without skipping a beat, she went in and said, hey, I need you to do this and this and this. And I told her the story later and she just roared. She thought it was the funniest thing ever. And it was simply because I was paranoid. And then the other challenge, too, is now that as I've grown in my career, I've gotten a team of people that work for me. And so it's a matter of them having access to me. And so it's if it's a cell phone versus a home phone, if it's via instant messaging, I mean, the solution is with the technology and having a great IT infrastructure that can help support it. But once you overcome those initial hurdles, it's a fairly seamless process.
You know, one of the big questions a lot of people ask is, isn't a recession the exact wrong time to be talking about this? How can we talk about flexibility when, you know, people are losing jobs? And in fact, what I found in reporting for my book is that it may be the exact right time to talk about it, because I know that we sat down with a lot of CEOs who said this is the moment when companies need to be more flexible, more creative about the way they reward their employees. They might not have cash on hand to give big bonuses, but they can offer time, and that for a myriad of reasons, it seems that this could actually be more beneficial right now.
No, I think the big picture is this is a big trend that is going to be continuing, and it's going to be an issue we're going to be facing for a long time. So it's a good thing we're certainly starting this process very much now. I think, you know, you're right that there are certainly what we're seeing is a lot of creativity these days. It is a very, you know, we're also seeing a lot of productivity growth in our firms. Mm-hmm. But I think stress does tend to force people to think of some different ways of doing things. And one of the things, certainly, we see them using more flexible work time. Sometimes, you know, it's sort of very much by necessity. So can we reduce everyone's hours as a way of keeping more people, you know, attached to the firm, or at least with some job? But certainly, I think it's going to be something, and I would very much hope as we recover that we see more of this.
And Secretary Solis, this is a lot of people assume flexibility means women. That we're and women, to be fair, certainly probably have driven this process. But when you start looking at the younger generation, the young men value this every bit as much as the women. This is not a female issue, is it?
Right. And I think, you know, Michelle Obama says it very clearly. It's a necessity. It has to happen. We have to have this flexibility for everyone. And we're in the situation now where we have sandwiched families, where you have people now coming back to a home and people having to stay in the workplace longer, taking care of the elderly and younger, a younger generation that may not be able to find a job yet because the recession is where it is. So you have multiple factors going on, different things happening in the household, and we need to be supportive. And that's why I'm very happy that this year in our budget in the Department of Labor, we're going to be putting forward a competition for states to participate in state leave so they can begin the planning process, and we're going to give grants out, $50 million. Some states are already there, our state, California, but we need to incentivize other states that are on the cusp. So I think that there's a lot of interest, and it is a good time to do it. Now when productivity is at its highest, we also need to be very mindful that you don't want to lose that talent, because you probably have some very good skilled people that want to stay at that job and will do more if you provide them with the opportunity to have flexibility and adaptability in the workplace.
And you know, Doug and Beth, I wonder, it's so clear to me, having spent so much time on this issue, it's a no-brainer. It makes sense. It's hard for me to understand what company wouldn't be pursuing this. But it has also seemed to me that in addition to men and women being scared to ask for flexibility, companies are often frightened of the prospect of diving into something like this. They worry nobody will show up to work. They wonder who's going to want to take advantage of it. They don't really know how to get the managers on board. How do we overcome the fear factor of flexibility for companies that aren't as involved in it?
Well, first of all, just to go back to another, there's never been a good time. I've been doing this for 34 years, and every year is different, and there's never a good time to pursue workplace flexibility. There's always, you know, what was it, Saturday Night Live with Rosanna Dana? I'm starting to date myself here. But, you know, she would say, it just goes to show you, it's always something. And in corporate America's case, it is always something. But what's beautiful about this in a challenging way is that it's a necessity now. And corporate America will deal with it because it's a necessity and it has to be dealt with. Because we have issues with our workforce. We have issues with attracting, developing, and retaining talent. So in my opinion, corporate America will deal with it because we have to. And how do you get over fear? I think the companies that are in the lead are going to realize benefits. And you just have to pursue it with fierce resolve and uncompromising. And as we do, and there are other companies that are way ahead of ours in this room today, people take notice because we do pay attention to what each other does. We do benchmark. And believe me, this wave is going to continue and build on itself because it's undeniable.
And what about you, Beth? What advice would you give for companies and employees who are worried about asking for this?
One of the things that I think we've done well as a company is to create an environment where our employees feel comfortable about it. We had some fun. We did this thing called the Flexibility Fair, where we had one of our senior HR professionals sit, not in a booth per se, but you could go up and talk to him and kind of say, how do I do this? You know, how do I have this conversation? And then you know, Doug referenced the survey that we did later. And this was all part of a volunteer coalition task force that came together and they were members of people who were passionate about flexibility. And so with the combination of creating the awareness at the fair and doing the survey, we got feedback saying, wow, thanks for just asking about my ideas about flexibility. I know that it may or may not happen for a lot of reasons, but just the fact that you cared enough to ask me what my opinion was went a long way with our employees. And so it's that feedback that we've now worked into helping design the curriculum so our managers can have these conversations.
But we have to deliver on the feedback. I mean, right. You ask, and the good news is they tell you, and then you have to do it.
Sure.
And we will. So that's part of the contract you have when you ask people that.
Well, yes, and then we'll wrap.
One thing, which is, I think we do need to realize there's a fair amount of heterogeneity across firm. So, you know, it will be very hard for a school teacher to ever telecommute, right? So I think we need to understand there's going to be differences across the economy. But I want to put in a plug for information. So what firms are doing, getting the best practices out there. And I'll put in a plug for research, because I think that's a big part of getting over this hump of just documenting what the productivity effects are. And I think that will help to deal with a lot of this fear and uncertainty.
I think you all have your work cut out for you. Research, best practices, we're counting on all of you. Thank you for lending us your wisdom and warmth and expertise on this. And I know you all know where to go now for your breakout panels, and then we'll see you back here afterwards. Thank you. Mm-hmm.